Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with Cane Hill Historic Museum curator, Lawrence McElroy, about the history of the Northwest Arkansas town, Cane Hill.
There's lots of historic firsts right here in this little place. Like, say, the first Sunday school in the Arkansas Territories. We had one of the first four-year college institutions here. Had the first public library was right here.
First college that admitted women, too.
That's right. Right, absolutely.
And we'll be taking a special guided tour of the museum with Lawrence as our guide. Coming up on Arts and Letters. And the March 7th, 1836 Arkansas Gazette says,
Cane Hill is one of the most densely settled neighborhoods in the West. There are four dry goods stores, one grocery, two wagon makers, four blacksmith shops, a post office, one church, an excellent school, one sawmill, and three grist mills.
From the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities. Today, we'll be taking a tour of the historic Cane Hill Museum with our tour guide, museum curator, Lawrence McElroy.
Believe it or not, there was a fountain right in the middle of what is now Highway 45, and right in front of the museum here. And it persisted until the 1950s.
We'll learn about Main Street, the fountain on the square, Cane Hill College, the Trail of Tears, and J.D. Wilbur's pottery. So let's put on our walking shoes and equip our wagons, and let's travel to the Northwest Arkansas town of Cane Hill for a visit. So we're here at the Cane Hill Museum. What's your name?
Lawrence McElroy. I'm now the Director of Arts and Culture, as well as the museum curator, and I'm full-time.
So when did you come to Cane Hill?
I've been here about 4 years.
And why has the history captured you so?
It's a combination. This place is paradise. The land, the people, the history, remarkable first. I was taken with it.
And every day, all day long, I'd make all my rounds. I think I knew every soul in that little town. Sometimes this world seems like rusted tin, but on Main Street, Cane Hill, life was golden. That's
the best part of this town is the stories. And the people here know those stories. They've handed them down.
Well, how about you take us on a tour?
Sure. We developed a timeline a couple of years ago. Wanted to get rid of some of the myths and legends that were here. So it's a very factual, fact-based timeline. It starts primarily in 1827 when the Cumberland Presbyterians got here and takes us up into the first part of the 20th century.
It says 1803, Louisiana Purchase, 1826, James Buchanan and Guilford Pliant are sent from Crystal Hill to scout Northwest Arkansas. And then you said it starts mostly in 1827.
It's basically when they got here. It was 1827. A year before, this big group of Cumberland Presbyterians were living around Little Rock, and they were having terrible problems with flooding and with malaria, and they sent a couple of scouts up this way. They'd heard there was good land up here. They came up and said, sure enough, there is. They came back and said, load it up, let's come up here. And that's where the place got started, and it has basically been largely run by Cumberland Presbyterians ever since.
And then it says you established in October of 1828 the first Sunday school in the Arkansas Territories. Pupils included 12 white children and one Negro man.
That's true.
You have a post office, right? It was the Cane Hill Post Office in 1830.
Right, very early post office. It has changed its name 8 times over the years. It was Boonesboro twice with different spellings. Makes keeping up with history rather difficult.
Right.
That's about 79.
And this was a pretty burgeoning town at one point, right? A lot of people were coming through here.
Very busy place. There were thousands of people here in the heyday, about the 1870s. It was the largest settlement in Washington County before Fayetteville really took off.
And then I had heard that the train didn't really come through here, so that hurt him a little bit.
That is one of our stories. Yeah, the Cumberland Presbyterians that sort of ran the place here had the opportunity to have the railroad come through Cane Hill, and they declined that offer, and it ended up going through Lincoln. And the economic situation that developed after that really caused a major downturn in Cane Hill.
As we walk in, we can see right here, there's J.D. Wilbur's pottery. Tell us about J.D. Wilbur.
His pottery studio, which was a little log cabin, is about a mile from here, and the kiln is actually still there. It's in ruin, but it's still there.
Wow.
From 1868, actually. I love to talk about J.D. Wilbur because he's an enigma. He's a fascinating character. We know a fair amount about him, but we have more questions than answers. He came out of a family of potters. 27 members of his family were potters in Ohio, which became the mecca of art pottery in America. And so the question is, why in the world was J.D. Wilbur here in the middle of the Ozarks making pottery? But he was very successful at it. He never employed anyone over the age of 12.
You can see his stamp on all the pottery.
That's very unusual because a lot of potters, rural potters, did not mark their work. So once it's sold, it's just out there. You don't know who made it. With J.D., he marked almost everything that he made. And so we're very fortunate to know that.
How many pots do you have left?
We have 7 in our collection, which is actually a lot. We recently put on an exhibition where we acquired, through temporary loans, we had about 40 pieces of his pottery.
When the Civil War ended, Cane Hill began to grow. J.D. Wilbur and his wife moved from Ohio. He was thin as a rail, she was plump and round, and they say that she weighed about 300 pounds. He had come down south, he just had to see the perfect clay for making pottery. So he dug that clay from the cold, hard ground, said, I'm gonna be the potter of Cane Hill Town. So he built a potter's wheel in a couple of days, and a brick kiln to fire all the vessels he made. The wheels of time spin round and round like the potter's wheel of Cane Hill Town. Vessels cast in earth and clay hold the stories of yesterday.
So this little room that we're looking at, this would this be like one of the rooms in a house around here, or what are we looking at? Early Cane Hill.
Yeah, simply a mock-up of a log cabin so that we have a place to exhibit our early furniture from here. We had a very prolific furniture maker, Mr. Pyatt, and that bed, that gorgeous cantaball bed, was made by him out of walnut trees that grow right here. That's Mr. Pyatt. Right there.
Oh, it is?
Rankin Pyatt. So.
They all look... That look of that age, right? It's the high collar and the beard. The beard may well be tucked, I can't tell, into his shirt. Well, we could talk a little bit about the Trail of Tears. It came right through the town, right?
Right. Yeah, obviously a tragic situation, but one of the earliest detachments, which is actually a treaty party of Cherokee led by B.B. Cannon, came through here in 1837, right in front of the museum right here, on their way to the Indian Territory in Oklahoma. This was about a day or two before the end of the trail for them. Tragic story about one 13-year-old Cherokee girl named Alzie Timberlake died here and was buried here, like I say, a day before they got to their destination.
Lovely bright red autumn leaf floated down from a maple tree, landed on a grave in front of at the wind-blown Carnahan Cemetery. A lonesome breeze whisked me back in time to 1837, Lord, I felt like crying. I could see families living in fear on the Trail of Tears. The Timberlakes, they were Cherokee, Fort
horse to travel west from Tennessee, across Kentucky and through Illinois. They'd already buried their youngest boy.
And you actually have the receipt for her coffin, right?
We do. We know who made her coffin, and we know that they camped on his land. That was James Coulter. So we know where they were the night before they got to their destination. We know where she was when they died. The big mystery is, where is Alzey buried? We would love to know where her grave is so we could mark that and honor that.
After 10 weeks, they were tattered and worn. Nothing to eat but fodder and corn. Winter had arrived, and with its chill, daughter Elsie taking ill. An old receipt had been found. It showed her coffin was purchased in Cane Hill Town. She had only lived but 13 years when her young soul left the trail of tears. The tragic deeds of yesterday left unmarked stones along the way. Shallow graves beside the road hold countless stories left untold.
You're listening to Arts and Letters. Let's continue our tour with Lawrence McElroy, the curator of the historic Cane Hill Museum, and let's learn about the Cane Hill College. Tell us just a little bit about the college. It's still there, the
Absolutely.
Building.
Yeah, the original college buildings, there were four massive college buildings up on top of the hill behind the current college building. They were all destroyed during the Civil War. So after that, in 1886, they built a brand new brick building, and that's the one you see standing today, recently restored to its 1886 appearance. It's absolutely gorgeous. The first Cane Hill Collegiate Institute classes are held at the north end of the hill to educate young men for the ministry. Classes are held in a two-room log building until 1850.
So here's the history of Cane Hill College, right? We'll look at some of this, and maybe I'll ask you to read a little bit here, too.
This is about the last Cane Hill College building. This fifth and last college building was erected in 1886 with J.P. Carnahan as contractor. Classes were held until the college closed about 1891. Public school was then held on the first floor, and the Boonesboro, or Cane Hill Presbyterian Congregation, continued to meet on the second floor until 1919, when they bought the Rock Church and moved there. The entire college building was then used for public school. In 1931, the building was drastically changed to accommodate the consolidated schools of Cane Hill District. In 1956, the final classes were consolidated into the Lincoln School System at Lincoln, Arkansas. The college building was then closed. In 1984, it was restored and now serves as a community center.
Oh, that's good. So it is still being used.
Absolutely. We currently rent it for weddings, meetings, that sort of thing. It's a great facility.
Some of the classes, or at least the subjects. Freshman class, Virgil, Cicero, Homer, algebra, Latin prose composition. We need our students to take that again. History and English literature, which is neat. Sophomore, they're taking logic and prose composition, Greek, Latin, and American literature. This is pretty intense stuff.
It truly is. Classic education. In the 1870s, we had two professors of art and drawing. If you can imagine that out here in the middle of nowhere.
And then maybe just read some that they did for the senior year.
And this is for the female students at Cane Hill College. And in the senior class, they were taking geometry, trigonometry, mental and moral philosophy, evidence of Christianity, zoology, botany, French completed, Latin is optional.
And I love this. Weekly exercises were held in declamations throughout the whole course.
So. Love it.
One of the first colleges that admitted women. Could you talk a little bit about that?
It absolutely was the first college in Arkansas to admit females. it started with the female seminary, which was in Clyde, which is several miles away, and then eventually the two schools merged. And in 1875, the Cane Hill Female Seminary united with Cane Hill College to become the first co-educational college in Arkansas. In 1868, Cherokee girls were allowed to attend the Cane Hill Female Seminary. And a related story, Confederate General Stand Waddy, who was one of the last generals to surrender in the Civil War, enrolled his son, Wadika Waddy, in Cane Hill College. We have wonderful letters from Wadika to his sisters back home talking about what a great time he had over here, and he wanted to meet some of the females in the seminary.
So this is the bank.
It was a gorgeous building, and it's still standing next door to the museum. It was unrecognizable, unfortunately, right now. In the 1960s, they knocked the front of it off and the top of it off. So we still have three rock walls, and we would love to restore that to that appearance right there. It's so lovely. We did happen to find these doors from the bank building. We followed up a tip, and we located them being used as the doors to a tiny little shed in the middle of a cow pasture about a mile from here. And the owner of it was gracious enough to let us have them.
That's so nicely done, this little exhibit. And just to explain it, you have the doors, and then inside the doors, it shows the cashier inside. So it's as if you were could go into the bank. This one might be a good story. The Bank of Cane Hill is robbed in broad daylight, and the perpetrators are never apprehended.
Yeah, in 1915, the Bank of Cane Hill was robbed, middle of the day. The story was that the students at Cane Hill School at the time watched the bank robbers ride away down Highway 45 here on their horseback, and they were never seen again. That story becomes one of the myths of Cane Hill. It gets merged with stories about Jesse James. Jesse James did not rob the bank in Cane Hill. His sister lived not far away, and he did reportedly visit his sister, but those stories have merged over the years.
So there was a Cane Hill and Stillwell telephone company.
There was lots of people who came into the museum asking when telephone service got to Cane Hill, and I did a little research and found out that, surprisingly, 1898. I had no idea it was here that early.
Oh, look at this gorgeous dress. So it's a wedding dress, right?
It is.
Belongs to Arabella Bell Yates. She wore the dress to her wedding in 1881.
Gorgeous silk brocade. And everyone that comes in here remarks at how small the people were. Very tiny waist on that.
Post office, the old post office.
This postal furniture started life next door in the building, which was originally a drugstore. We actually have a wonderful photograph of it right there in place in the back of the building. And then it came over to this building in the 1940s and served as a post office until 1980s, actually.
Right. I remember, not this, but I remember these.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a wooden structure that has post office and money orders and then slots for the mail and then lock boxes, too.
And we put it in place here. We can get to both sides. So kids love to come here and just put mail through the window and play post office. Yeah. Love to watch them.
Wow. Still love to do that.
Oh, yeah.
I know there's some stories about the Civil War. There's some tough stories about the Civil War.
There are. We had a battle here about a week before the Battle of Prairie Grove. I like to explain it simply by saying the Confederates were basically out of groceries. They were amassed down around Fort Smith, down in the River Valley. And there was good crops, mills up here, lots of supplies here in Cane Hill. So they were making a wagon train trip up here to get supplies. And they had done it once or twice, and then they got caught. And so that's where the battle ensued.
Yeah, so two armies met at Cane Hill. So this was a prelude to a battle at Prairie Grove, right?
Correct. This happened about a week before the Battle of Prairie Grove. It's a 12-mile running battle. The Confederates were basically just trying to slow down the Union forces to allow their wagon trains to get down the hill towards Van Buren, and they were just trying to block them until dark. We had a couple of unfortunate hangings that were related to the Civil War.
They marched into Cane Hill after the battle of Prairie Grove with their muskets held high, a cheering and a shouting like braggadocious schoolboys. Before the fall comes the pride, and someone was hiding up on a rooftop, and no one ever knew who fired those pot shots. But those bullets brought some blue coats down, and a scapegoat must be found, and there would be a hanging in Cane Hill Town. And the moon was so black you could hardly see, the gallows would be that old oak tree. Ones in town were the old men and children, too old, too young to fight in that old war. And the three men they chose, they were guilty of nothing, that according to Cane Hill law.
You're listening to Arts and Letters. Let's continue our tour with Lawrence McElroy, curator for the historic Cane Hill Museum in Cane Hill, Arkansas.
Let's talk a little bit about the music here. In particular, you have Lee A. Walker, but talk about the musicians. Banjo Walker is one. We're looking at the fretless banjo.
This one is pretty rare. This dates to the 1840s, owned by a fellow named Lee Banjo Walker, and his great-grandson ended up donating this to the museum. We were talking earlier about how much the local residents appreciate their history. This was given to his great-grandson when he was 7 years old. He kept that his entire life under his bed and then donated it to the museum.
So they had a lot of musicians here. There's a picture of the musician sitting kind of under a tree with you got a fiddle and a banjo.
We found a number of wonderful photographs of groups of musicians from Cane Hill, but unfortunately they don't have identifications on the backs of them. We don't know who they are or what the occasion was. We wish we knew more about them.
Yes, and tell us about kind of your infamous musician who lives right up on, well, used to live right up on the hill.
That would be Booth Campbell. Mm-hmm. He was quite a character.
To life and memories perish, can I forget how dear thou.
He was a noted Arkansas banjo player. He was in some of the earliest folk festivals that got started around here. And you can see his house up atop a bluff from the front door of the museum. And the story is that he would play his banjo practice on his front porch. And when he did, you could hear his banjo music all down the valley, all through Cane Hill.
Oh, what you going to do when the great day comes? Sounding of the horn, beating of the drum. No use to be a grieving, I'm going to be a leaving. Goodbye, my honey, I'm gone. Yes, gone. Farewell, my baby, I'm gone.
Oh, and then you got a lot of old books. Are these all from people who've donated them?
Even better story, all these books you're looking at came out of the Cane Hill College Library. So this was the first public library in Arkansas. So that's why these are here, to honor that. Most of the books you're looking at came out of the public school era in the 20th century. Some of them still have the library cards in them. But we do have some of the original books out of the college. We got those under lock and key.
I got pigs and cows tied up in last fall. Then I'm
When did the population begin to decline?
About that in the 1890s, turn of the century, it started going downhill. And then by the time the Great Depression hits, it's pretty much all over for Cane Hill.
can I forget how dear thou art to me? Morn, noon, and night, my dream shall be. Fondly I'm dreaming ever of thee.
We're very fortunate to have a very wise board of directors for Historic Cane Hill Incorporated. It was started back in 2013. They took the reins and really invested quite a lot into the restoration of all these buildings, trying to acquire as many important historic structures as we could. And prior to that, I have to mention that the local residents had done a great deal to maintain what they had here. They developed the Cane Hill Festival, annual festival here, just to raise money to keep the college building from falling in. And fortunately, Historic Cane Hill, Inc. stepped in and restored that building. That was the first step, and they have marched on from there, and we've got big plans.
Tell us a little bit about the festival. Like, when is it? What does it all involve?
We have a great annual festival here. It's always the third weekend in September. We demonstrate how to make sorghum, how to make lye soap. There's quilts, lots of vendors. It's a great time. We'll have probably 3,000 people here in town during that weekend. It's wonderful. The place comes alive.
Where's the cemetery in relation to?
The cemetery is at the north end of town. Okay. It's on top of the hill.
But there's a lot of stories in that graveyard, too.
Lots of stories in there. It's not the oldest cemetery in the area, but it's the second oldest.
Any final thoughts for us? It's Everytown, USA, but it's also so much more. You know, because it is. It has the square and the fountain, but it also has the Trail of Tears and the first college and the first public library. And I mean, so it is Everytown, USA, but it isn't.
That's right. I see that. It's very much like every other little rural town, but it is remarkable in its history. There are so many firsts here.
A lot of these towns, when the older people die, they lose the stories.
That's right.
And these artifacts, with the artifacts come the stories.
That's right. Oh, that's the best part of this town is the stories. And the people here know those stories. They've handed them down. We have wonderful museum docents here. Come by here sometime and just sit and talk to the docents. They will tell you wonderful, interesting stories. The land that we own is open to everyone, to the public. We welcome them with open arms. We have walking trails. We have a walking trail even through the town that links up our historic buildings. People are welcome to come and visit anytime.
Well, thank you, Lawrence, for the tour and for being so gracious. And wow, this is stunningly cool. I love it. I love it.
Thanks for the visit.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Thank you to musicians Donna and Kelly Mulholland for providing the soundtrack for this episode and for so eloquently capturing the essence and storied history of historic Cane Hill, Arkansas. A special thanks to Mary Ellen Cubitt for recording the tour and for asking important questions at just the right time. Thank you to Adam Simon of Simon Sound for mastering the episode. Thank you to Four Points by Sheridan Midtown Little Rock for supplying rooms to guests of Arts and Letters. Thank you to Sticky's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack for keeping music alive and well in Arkansas. Thank you to the Mary Parlor Collection for the archival footage. Generous funding for Arts and Letters was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you to Lawrence McElroy for taking us on this tour of the historic Cane Hill Museum, and in doing so, for conjuring up Main Street and its fountain in the square, the bank and its robbers, and all of the ghosts, artifacts, and stories from the Loafer's Bench. For Arts and Letters, let's heed these words from Booth Campbell.
Goodbye.